Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Adam and Garth. It's Friday, the 15th of May, 2015. This podcast is available from iTunes, so you can download and subscribe over there, keep us going. And you can also find us over at Podomatic. That's our main podcasting website for this project. So check us out over at podomatic.com, and that's the Kraz Files, C-R-A-Z-Z. You can also find us on Facebook. That is the Kraz Files, and I've turned that into a website, so there is a ton of information going up over there, and our podcast can also be played on Facebook each week, and you can share that around with everyone you know. You can also catch up with us on Twitter. There's a few stories going up there as well, so active there. Check us out. And we have a YouTube channel, which is the Kraz Files, so plenty of stuff going up there to have a listen to and share around as well. And you can also send us an email to thekrazfiles@yahoo.com.au. And thanks for listening to our podcast. Okay, we are plugged in, Garth. You all right there? You sound like you're having a seizure or something.
No, I'm just having a cup of tea. It's freezing cold here. We're expecting a storm. Actually, we're expecting, according to the weatherman, about 5 or 6 days' rain. And the conditions are very, very cold coming up. Cold southwesterlies. So it could be, batten down the hatches for this week.
Yeah, same here. It's utterly freezing. People think Sydney, Australia's hot all the time, but it isn't. But we're ready to go today, Garth, with our guest.
Yes,
ready to blast
forward.
Off. Yes, and unlike those in the Australian media, we are not spineless cowards and we're not backstabbers. And we actually have integrity in heart and spirit, Garth, and the willingness to learn and be open-minded. So, and keep striving forward and going forward and learning information. We're not always right and correct. We have no ego here, Garth. We just want to learn while we're on this planet as much as we can. And we have a great guest joining us today for a conversation. It's Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, all the way from Ohio. Welcome, Doc. It's great to have you here.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
Hello, Dr. Sherry.
Great. I know you're very busy, but we're going to go through some info with you today, and it's going to be wonderful. It's fantastic to have you here. You're an amazing lady, and you are one of the true people out there walking this earth, and you are so brave, and you have so much integrity, and it's really great to have you here and talk with you. So thanks for being on with Garth and I on the Kraz Files, and why don't we sort of get to know you a little bit. I think that's the best thing to do. You were planning to come to Australia and do some talks. That didn't happen. We're going to go through that a little bit today because it's very important. But why don't you, because there's so many people, I guess, we don't have a big population in Australia, Doc, and I honestly don't think any people had any problems with you coming here, and probably a lot of people didn't even know you were coming anyway. So for those people who aren't sure about you, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I like to do that with the guests. I like to get to know them and hear about your life and how you got to this point in time. So go through that a little bit, and then we'll sort of lead up to what happened with your talking or speaking tour of Australia.
Sure. Yeah, that'll be fine. So I'm born and bred here in Ohio. I come from three generations of chiropractors in my family. That my dad, my father, my grandfather, three uncles and two cousins were chiropractors. And that's why I wanted to be an osteopathic physician, and because osteopathic physicians in the United States are trained very differently than osteopaths in Australia. And your media tried to make a really big deal about that, because in America, osteopathic physicians have the equivalent licensure of an MD, a medical doctor. But in addition to that, they're also trained in structural medicine like a chiropractor. So I would say that we have more training and more education than any MD does, because we learn structural medicine and they don't. And as an osteopathic physician here in America, you can be a neurosurgeon or an obstetrician or a pediatrician. And what I did for 12 years was that I was an emergency medicine physician. Your media a couple of times tried to say that I was like a paramedic. And that I was in an ambulance, but I wasn't. I was an emergency medicine physician, and I actually was the director of the emergency department for 12 years, which as a female osteopathic doctor, I was one of only four women on the medical staff, and I was the only DO, and all of the MDs voted and elected for me to be the director of the emergency department. So I just wanted to push that out there a little bit about my credentials, because that was one of the main things that the nasties and the nasty Australian press, not the good guys, but the nasty guys, tried to make a really big deal of saying that I wasn't even a real doctor, and that just simply isn't true. So I moved to Cleveland in 1996, and I started an integrative medicine practice. And then in September of 2000, I was invited to attend the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C., and spent 4 days in a meeting listening to people talk about problems associated with vaccines. And the people who were speaking were MDs and PhDs and researchers and scientists and parents. And I thought, how did I miss this? I mean, I grew up in a chiropractic family. I was not vaccinated as a kid. I had all the age-appropriate things like measles, mumps, and rubella and chicken pox when I was 9 and 10 years old. I feel as an adult, that's probably why I'm as healthy as I am, because my immune system was allowed to do what it was supposed to do.
Of course.
And how did I miss this whole concept about this controversy? So I came home and I thought, where do you start this investigation? How do you start researching it? And I started to research it from the Centers for Disease Control, because I thought they are the people who are most respected and have the most information. So let's go see what they have to say about vaccinations. And I read the first paper, which was the 1998 version of the General Recommendations of Vaccination. And it was a 42-page poorly written document that was just horrible. And I thought, this just can't be what an entire industry is built on. I mean, this is it? Like, really? And so one thing led to another. And over the years now, since 2000, so this is 2015, I've probably logged well over 20,000 hours of my own personal time investigating the problems associated with vaccines, the problems in terms of manufacture, the problems in terms of the politics, and the nasty things that go on behind the scenes in terms of laws, the conflicts of interest, the different vaccines ingredients. We have grown from 1985 of giving children three vaccines to 20 years later, 30 years later. Now in 2015, we've gone from three vaccines to 49 doses of 16 vaccines, and there are dozens and dozens in the developmental pipeline targeted towards adolescents and adults. So the sheer number of vaccines is a problem. Starting younger and younger is a problem. We never gave vaccines at birth prior to 1991. And now we give the hepatitis B at birth, and they're talking about adding more vaccines at birth. I think that what's happening here is that the people who are making these decisions feel like they just put this little drop of something into a body, and that's just good enough to create an antibody and keep them sick. They don't understand what's happening, or they don't care what's happening in the biochemistry, the physiology, the massive ramifications of a rapidly developing infant being injected with things that could kill them. And so I've spent the last 15 years of my life really trying to get people educated about what's coming through that needle, about the fact that the childhood diseases are really not that scary and not that deadly, and that the long-term trade-off between of what comes through that needle and the potential long-term complications to your health is really not a fair trade-off to decreasing the incidence of childhood diseases that were always just a rite of passage for many hundreds of years.
Yes, that's unbelievable that they're pushing it so hard, Dr. Sherry. You know, when there's so much, you know, in one of your articles, you mentioned that they're telling you on the labels and also in the papers that are printed, that what are the side effects of all these injections and what they have in them. And as you state, that you're not saying anything new, you're actually, you know, saying what they're saying.
What they're telling you.
Well, and I think that's one of the things over the years is that what I really did, and when I started this back in September of 2000 and 2001, there was just a handful of us, you know, Dr. Vera Shribner in Australia, and a few people up here in the States. There couldn't have been more than 20 people who were really going out and digging through the medical literature and looking at the research and trying to wake people up. And so that we started from that spot, and now we've got, I don't know, millions and millions of people that are more awake and are understanding now that what is happening, that they've been co-opted. And what I've always done is what I feel is just a kind of a review of the literature. I go through and point out the obvious, that if anybody, any doctor, any physician, or any parent, or anybody else would bother to just read, that they would see these things for themselves. I mean, your press, after I didn't come to, you know, was trying to say, well, I don't have any published literature, and I'm not a researcher, so how can I say anything about vaccines? Well, that's not my role, to be a researcher and doing scientific investigation. All I'm doing is pointing out what's already out there. It's sort of like I used this example one time when I was giving a talk to a bunch of physicians here in the States. They were a bunch of conventional doctors. And I said to them, mostly men, I said, how many of you guys in here read the magazine Sports Illustrated? And of course, most of their hands went up. And I said, so did anybody read the article on page 48 about the women's field hockey tournament in Brazil? And of course, no hands went up. And I said, well, it's there. And I picked up the magazine and I turned it over and I showed it to them. And I said, so just because you didn't read it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And just because, so what you do with a medical journal is you flip through them, flipping page after page. If there's a title or something that attracts your attention, you will read the conclusion of the abstract and keep on going. But if something is there and it doesn't catch your eye or you're not interested, you flip right past it and then try to say that there wasn't even anything published about it. That's what you people do with vaccine literature that does not look favorably on vaccines. You pretend it isn't there, just like the women's field hockey tournament. You would try to claim that it didn't exist.
Yes, and that's happening all the time in our press anyway, because it's mainly the Murdoch press is the one that's a sort of pro the vaccines, as you are aware, Dr. Sherry, but also that Murdoch and company, it appears invested heavily into the drug corporations.
Well, he's still involved.
And this, once again, is a conflict of interest here in Australia, where one of our major media press is actually promoting vaccines when they should be keeping right out of it and just reporting, you know, both sides of the story. But the Murdoch press isn't. And we've had some very, very nasty articles put out, which is hard for the people out there, particularly the women who are bearing these children. And they're reading this sort of stuff. It confuses them and they really don't know what to do, because the doctor's pressuring him, the newspapers are pressuring him, and that's why it's so important having people like you, and that's why we just want you to keep going and telling us as much as you know about this in the time we have.
Yeah, Well, it's a fear campaign, Garth. I was talking to Sherry before.
Yes.
It's an absolute fear campaign by the Murdoch press because Rupert Murdoch owns 70% of our press, Doc. And this is unprecedented. It's incredible. I have a whole files of stuff on Mr. Murdoch, Garth, going way back in time, written by incredible people, you know, with all these Murdoch newspapers, what they did to Dr. Wakefield, the scandals and you know, the cover-ups and media cover-ups with this Rupert Murdoch and his vaccine exposure and crimes revealed. And I couldn't go through this in a lifetime, how much all of this is. There's Rupert Murdoch bullying Australian parents, pushing this vaccine. His son, James Murdoch, was heavily involved, sitting on the board with GlaxoSmithKline, and they're still involved, and they're the biggest producers of vaccines in Australia, childhood vaccines. We even have Rupert Murdoch involved in 9/11, Garth. We have a report here, Rupert Murdoch, a portrait of Satan, you know, selling vaccines, the Murdoch press in Australia and its dirty secrets by John Pilger. It just goes on, the exposure, cover-up of Murdoch vaccine-pushing crimes. William Newton, it goes on, Sherry, and on and on and on about Rupert Murdoch. And so these people that you spoke to on the Today program, the woman that you spoke with on that, because I did see the clip on YouTube, this is just another talking head being churned out of an endless conga line of fools. That's what they are. And they don't care about any debate or having a conversation with you. They go in and they get told what to say and instructed what to think and ask you. And they twist what you say and they smear you. That's what they do. That's what the media in Australia do. They're spineless, gutless cowards, and it's so pathetic that it's almost a disaster in this country, Garth.
The problem, as I mentioned, was that it has an effect on the people who are involved with this. Their children are being injected.
Well, they're being scared.
They don't have a choice.
They're being spooked. So, you know, without
Dr. Cherry,
any information.
You have a lot of knowledge on the pharmaceutical industries, the corporations themselves. Could you enlighten us with some of that? Because I can't think of the lady. She was another doctor you spoke with some time ago, and it was a really great view. I have it on the computer, but you really spoke about the corporations and their involvement in promoting this through the governments.
Well,
that'd be very interesting.
I think that the here in the United States, that the U.S. government is the largest purchaser of vaccine, single purchaser of any of vaccines of anybody else in the world. They have set up funding mechanisms through what we call Obamacare, which is our nationalized health plan now, which is horrible. And they have another thing called Section 317 funding that has been funded by the sale of vaccines and has every professional organization that you can imagine as being in terms of like the American Academy of Pediatrics and Surgery and Internal Medicine and the list, every professional organization that part of their dues goes to fund this Section 317 funding to make sure that children get vaccinated. There's Every Child by Two. There's the list is goes on and on and on to make sure that all of these kids are nothing more than receptacles of the drug company's products. And sometimes I think that the to take a little bit of the heat out of the discussion, because the pro-vaccine, anti-vaccine discussion gets very polarized. And sometimes if you take the heat out of it by saying the vaccine is nothing more than a product. It's no different than a light bulb or a screwdriver or a wrench or a coffee cup. It's a product. And why, if we were debating the pros and cons of a coffee cup, would we get like so hostile and angry and threatening and wanting to sue people and pass laws? Because the vaccine is a product. And it is a product that can harm you. And it's a product that gets sold and makes a company and a sector of a company, the vaccine sector of the pharmaceutical industry, a lot of money.
And it's cheap to produce, aren't they, Doc, the vaccines?
It's cheap to produce. And I think about the vaccines as being almost, they're an industry loss leader. meaning it's sort of like you walk down the street and somebody has a promotion, they'll give you a free $20 t-shirt just to come in the store. And then when you're in the store, they try to sell you a $1,000 Armani suit. And so that's what happens with the vaccines. Yeah. They'll give you all these things because you need them. Your babies might die without them, and they're safe and effective. And you don't even have to pay for them. Your insurance will cover it, or the health department will cover it. So we draw them in. We inject them with all of these toxic substances. A significant portion of children get sick in one form or another. And then where the real money is made is all the drugs to treat their asthma, allergies, ADHD, insulin-dependent diabetes, cancer. All of those things is where the real money comes from. And so that's why the vaccines are cheap. And they're promoted so heavily, and why they defend them. And it doesn't matter what happens, like those babies that just died in Mexico after they got three vaccines. Mm. It doesn't matter. It's never, ever, ever the vaccine that was the problem, because we have to defend the vaccines, or they have to defend the vaccine to the hilt, because it is what is the economic driver of their trillion-dollar industry. Because the kids that are not vaccinated are rarely ever sick. They're not on any chronic drugs. They've barely been on an antibiotic their entire life. You cannot build a trillion-dollar industry on the backs of a bunch of healthy, unvaccinated kids.
Mm. So it's sort of the other way around. There was that word planned obsolescence has to do with TV sets and everything else, but it appears as though it's us, the human being, because it's certainly shortening the lifespan. And when you see some of these children that have these terrible complaints at an early age, the hospitals are full of them. I can see what you're saying, yes, and the drugs that must be going into these children. And just in my small area, imagine if you took that just over the whole of Australia and counted all the heads, you'd be horrified at how many children are sick and dying.
Oh, so many reactions too, Garth. I just put another one up today. A Michigan baby has died, and a pathologist confirmed vaccines responsible. A 14-month-old baby became ill, and then after it was vaccinated, and has passed away. Mm. But, you know, the Murdoch media won't print these. Doc, they'll print some poor unfortunate baby that was too young to get the pertussis vaccination and got it and passed away, and they'll blame unvaccinated children like they're lepers and treat their parents like criminals now. I don't know if you saw the news story, Doc, in Australia, but there some new laws have come out, and it's a new biosecurity control. And it can these orders allow health department officials to force people to be vaccinated and quarantined. That came out of Real News Australia and Tot News, but it was originally from The Guardian. So they're saying now in Australia, anyone suspected of having serious contagious diseases could face 5 years in prison and forced vaccinations. it's just getting crazy, Garth. You know,
well, it is getting terrible. All the way through, but Dr. Sherry, you mentioned a little bit earlier that when you were a child, you weren't vaccinated, and I can relate to that because I wasn't vaccinated either, and I had all the measles and all the various things. Could you explain to our listeners what it happens when an unvaccinated child gets these so-called illnesses or viruses or whatever you want to call them? And how the immune system reacts and protects that particular person or child, particularly child.
Makes it stronger.
Yes, could you explain that in your words so that people can really understand to leave the children alone and their own immune systems will cope?
Your immune system has two arms. It's sort of like if you have two hands. And your immune system has two arms. There is one arm is called TH1, and one arm is called TH2. And when you in the TH2 side is the side that produces the antibodies. The TH1 is your white blood cells and your macrophages and messenger molecules and all of the things that are needed to gobble up the viruses and bacteria that somehow got past your skin, past your throat, past your gut, and somehow got into your bloodstream in order to start an infectious process, which starts with fever. then it goes to a rash or a cough or whatever. And the purpose of the fever is good. And I wish that people would stop running for the aspirin or the Tylenol or the Aleve as soon as their kid gets a little fever, because that fever serves a very important purpose of burning out the bugs. Those bugs go in there at 98.6. And when your blood goes up to 101 Fahrenheit, I'm sorry, I think that's 30, what is that, 34 Celsius at 104? Is so when it goes up to that point, it burns off the bugs, and that's the God-given immune system in response that gets rid of the invading pathogen. That whole side of the equation is your Th1 side of the equation. And then as you start to kill off the bug, you create antibodies to make it go away. And this is a dance. It's like shaking hands with yourself, taking your left and your right hand and shaking really hard and interweaving your fingers and doing all these things to kill off the bugs. So that when you're done with the chicken pox or the measles or whatever, both sides of your immune system have been engaged, and it leaves a lifetime imprint of memory of remembering what that war was all about and how the war was won. So the next time you get exposed to, say, measles, your body goes, ah, I remember that. Let's kick out a little antibody and let's just get rid of it. We don't have to go through that whole battle all over again. That's what lifetime immunity is. And that's why when you actually have these infections, why it's very different, the outcome and the long-term outcome, because you've engaged the entire immune system. When you get a vaccine, you're only engaging the Th2 side of the equation. You get this artificial introduction of a substance that your immune system creates, this thing called an antibody, that the vaccine industry has made the assumption that just because that antibody's there, it's going to keep you from getting sick. They call that, you know, this mark of immunity, and that is why they say vaccines are effective, because something gets injected, it creates an antibody, which is what it was supposed to do. But being effective in terms of making the antibody and being protective of protecting you from getting sick are not synonyms. And that's why there are so many cases in the medical literature of vaccinated kids who have a protective antibody that get sick anyways, because it was an artificially induced property that is a marker of contamination. And the Th1 side of the equation, with your white blood cells and cytokines and fever and all these other things that need to happen, was never engaged. And that's why you have to get all these boosters, because you toss in this stuff, you create an antibody, over time it goes away. Well, I guess we need to do it again. It didn't work the first time, I guess we'll give them a second or a third booster. And so that's why it's so important that when you have these normal childhood diseases, and then the other thing that happens, say with measles, and say it's a woman, the antibodies, the long-term antibodies that young girl who was probably somewhere between 9 and 11 years of age and had the measles, and measles is a fever, a cough, a rash, maybe some diarrhea, and some watery, runny eyes. And when you go through 2 weeks of fever, you get a little peeling of skin off the palms of your feet and the soles of your feet and the palms of your hands that sort of documents the infection is over. And then you have a lifetime in immunity. And then those antibodies that have engaged both sides of your immune system, when that little girl grows up and has babies and starts to breastfeed those babies, those real, not artificial,
keep going, Sean. Yeah, Bill Gates is in his coffin and he's tweaking the buttons. He doesn't like what Dr. Sherry's saying.
I'm not sure where I fell off there. I'm not sure which last part you heard. Did you hear me talking about breastfeeding?
Keep going. Yeah, go into that a little bit.
Okay, so the breastfeed. So if a mom has actually had measles or chickenpox or rubella as a child, they create an antibody so that when the mom grows up and has a baby and starts breastfeeding, the antibodies that go through the breast milk are protective. They are the real antibodies that were induced by engaging both Th1 and Th2 sides of the equation. So now those infants, those very young infants that are less than a year of age, are protected by the mom's natural antibodies. They are not the same antibodies that cross into breast milk that come from mom being vaccinated when she was a year old or 12 years old, because those antibodies go away. They're not there anymore. And so now we're trying to create problems caused by vaccines, and we're trying to address problems caused by vaccines by giving another round of vaccines. It's sort of like the chickenpox and the shingles. You know, we made chickenpox go away. The incidence of chickenpox went away with the chickenpox vaccine. But we have exponentially increased the number of shingles because how we maintained our long-term immunity from chickenpox was being re-exposed when our children and grandchildren had chickenpox. That made our long-term immunity sort of beef up and say, oh, yeah, I remember this, and I got to keep that virus in check. Well, now without chickenpox being out in the general circulation, now we've created the shingles vaccine. So now we're creating vaccines to address problems caused by vaccines. It's a never-ending, just insane a cycle of money.
And the flu shot causes shingles because it did in my grandmother and many elderly people in Australia. And it's very, very agonizing for them. So it's unbelievable, Garth, isn't it?
It is rather frightening because I went through that with my mother. And
shingles.
Yes, I had to take her away from the doctor, and I put her under a naturopath, and he used it was a German type of medicine herb he used, and it within about a week and a half to 2 weeks she started to feel better, but she was getting worse. She was dying when they were treating her with the pharmaceutical stuff, and absolutely. You know, she was in such pain, they couldn't do anything for her. But this herb that this naturopath administered, as I said, within a fortnight, it was absolutely incredible how it started to improve her.
They're pushing the flu vaccine doc in Australia. They're trying to hand them out like lollies.
you're talking about your grandmother though got shingles from the shingles vaccine.
No,
right?
The doctor. She'd never had a flu shot, and the doctor talked her into a flu shot.
And then
she got shingles.
Yeah, it's happened
a lot. Yeah. It almost killed her, and the doctor was giving her these drugs, and I went down to see her, and I was horrified the state she was in. So I got a naturopath to come over, and which he did, and he took her for there. And within a fortnight, she was starting to feel better.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's interesting. I suppose it's really possible because the multi-dose flu shots have mercury in them. And so because they have mercury in them, you know, I'm sure that it could be an immunosuppressant and allow the virus to pop up and cause all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
Yes, because when it happened, Dr. Sherry, I got on the computer and it was statistics from America, and it was something like 40% of aged people who had the flu shot then got shingles. And it was a huge figure. It was around about 40%, could have been 36 to 40%, but it was over a third. I haven't got it because my old computer, which was a Bill Gates one, failed me so often I threw it in the garbage bin, but I'd like to find those statistics again. Do you have any knowledge on that?
I do not, but it wouldn't surprise me, but I don't have any knowledge on that. And I wonder if, you know, the flu shots that get manufactured for Australia are different than ones that are here in the U.S. They're by, you know, a different company. And remember, was it last year or two, a couple years ago, where all those children got narcolepsy? Scenes in Australia.
Yeah, I'll go through that with you, Doc, because I actually dug all this up. Not all of it, but I've been able to get some of it. And this is all from the mainstream news, from WesternAustraliaToday.com, WA News. This is going back to April 23rd, 2010. Flu vaccination ban goes national after fever convulsions in children. They were saying the seasonal flu vaccinations across Australia for children under 5 have been suspended after 23 children in Western Australia were admitted to hospital with convulsions following their injections, and a couple of children remained in a coma. One of the mothers said that her child got the flu vax and he couldn't cry. His head was hanging down in the car seat and he couldn't move. I was petrified. It was the worst experience of my life. Now, that goes back to 2010 when the government supposedly called for a national Australia-wide ban. And then I go through more here. This is from the news, Perth Now. from April 3rd, 2011, and parents of a baby girl who was a victim of the flu vaccine again. They were suing the state government, so the parents of a baby girl. This was another victim of the flu debacle, and she has brain damage. So she suffered global brain injury plus kidney, liver, and bone marrow failure, along with prolonged seizures following the vaccine flu vac shot. Then we skip forward to April 20 from Australian Doctor News. 2012, the chief medical officer has issued a reminder that flu vax is not to be used in children aged under five because it's still being used. So they didn't ban it at all. Then we move forward to news, ABC News in Australia, flu vax given to dozens of children. That's what they know, despite this supposed ban. So dozens of young children have been given a flu vaccine despite it being banned for under 5 year olds in Australia. It induces fever, vomiting and convulsions. And then we push even further forward to the Herald Sun on May 7th, 2015 this year. 9 Australian children have been given, as we know, the flu vaccine that supposedly banned Dr. Sherry. And they're saying that it's supposed to be given to kids under 5. I don't understand. If it's not safe for kids under 5, why is it safe for kids? Why is it safe for kids over 5? But this was put up on our Facebook page, and the Department of Health are still calling for this not flu vax, not to be given to kids under 5, but it's still going on for over 5 years now. And this is cases in New South Wales, Queensland, South Australia, and Western Australia. Kids are still being given this. And they're actually saying some doctors, Sherry, believe this or not, they're taking off the labels on this drug so no one knows what it is. And they're still giving it to kids.
That's frightening.
They're taking the labels off the flu vax because they know it's not right to give to kids under 5. Doctors are doing this in this country right now. So if your children are out there in Australia and they're under 5, they could be getting the flu vax shot and you won't know. And when they hang their head down in the back of your car or have seizures on your living room floor, you're not going to have anyone to help you in this country, you know? There it is, FluVax 2015, rolled out to Australian children. And it says on the front of the box, doctor, do not use in children under 5 years. There's warnings all over this thing, and they're still giving it to them.
It's criminal. It's
absolutely criminal. Well, these were the warnings you were talking about, Dr. Sherry. You know, it's all written on... It's all written in the reports and in the whatever it is. It's there for everybody to see, and yet these pro-vaxxers still argue.
And Garth, there was another one, a perfectly healthy Florida girl, 10 years old. She's been paralyzed with a rare brain infection. She can no longer speak. And she was given the flu shot, and she was completely healthy. Her mother said it was absolutely that. 10-year-old girl in Florida, Sherry, been paralyzed for almost a year now with a rare inflammation in her brain, and her family is directly blaming the flu shot. She was completely healthy before she went in for it. This has just come out now. So this is happening in other countries all around the world, you know, with this damn flu shot. And they're pushing it here in the newspapers and the news, on the TV, everywhere you go, everywhere you turn around, they're pushing this flu shot. You even get text messages on your phone from the local medical centers reminding you to go and get it.
It's pretty interesting that can you think of any other product in any other industry that was a documented faulty product that was harming and even killing people that would still be on the market?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, especially a herb or a vitamin. Oh, my goodness.
If there was an herb or a vitamin, it would be taken off the market and banned forever. But, you know, think about anything else in the automobile industry, in aviation, in any other industry. They use the precautionary principle. If there's any doubt that this is causing a problem, we need to wait until we know for sure that it's not. That's the precautionary principle. When it comes to vaccines, it's like, we're going to keep using it until you prove that there's something wrong with it. And I don't care how many people we maim, kill, cause illness and sickness and things along the way. It doesn't matter, because guess what? When we do that, we get to sell them more drugs.
Yes, and the crazy thing of that is that they've been removed. They can't be legislated against.
I know.
That's terrible, isn't it?
They're rogue. They're rogue criminals just operating at will, doing whatever they want without any consequences.
Well, the courts must be criminal. The judiciary must be criminal to allow them.
they're owned by the big pharma. I mean, the big pharma support our government. We know that. Our Prime Minister Tony Abbott received funding from big pharmaceutical companies.
Well, he's a Rhodes Scholar, I guess. Yeah. You've got to expect.
The power that they have in this country is unbelievable, because we only have a small population, Perry, like 23 million. It's not like the US. And they have a lot of power here, especially with the media, because, you know, people are weaned on the Murdoch media. They suckle at the Murdoch teat their entire lives, and this is what they swallow and believe, the Murdoch newspapers.
See, my problem is not only with the political incestual relationship that happens in your country and in mine, but the problem, as far as I'm concerned, is the physicians. The doctors are the biggest problem of all of it, because they're brainwashed, they're lazy. They are all about the money. You know, they can bill for these things. They are told that vaccines are safe and effective. And of course, if there was something wrong with them, the FDA would take them off the market. And we know that vaccines save lives and they don't harm anybody, because of course that whole autism thing has been debunked, which, first of all, it hasn't. But we're not just talking about autism. We're talking about a very long list of other types of neurological conditions, autoimmune disorders, allergies, asthma, a whole lot of things that these vaccines are contributing to. And so the drug companies could make drugs all day long, and the legislators could pass laws. But if the physician stood up for the patient and stood up and said, this is harming people, we must stop. We must find some other way to keep people from getting sick. We cannot continue to keep causing diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis and asthma and all these things. We must stop. We must use the precautionary principle until we show that these things are not causing harm. In the United States, the U.S. government has paid out over $3 billion U.S. dollars in vaccine injury compensation claims. And it's estimated that less than 25% of people who've been injured actually got a claim, and that there are millions, tens of millions of other people who don't even know that there is a program here to pay a claim for an injury, or their injury was not severe enough to file for a claim. But every person who gets vaccinated, in my opinion, every single person that gets vaccinated, at some point, their immune system has been damaged. And whether that shows up this week, this month, next year, or 5 years from now, you have poisoned and co-opted and corrupted the rapidly growing immune systems of children. I mean, think about, you know, a baby's born is like 10 pounds, right? So what is that, like 5 kilos, 4 kilos when they're born? Yes. And now what, all the things that have to happen developmentally from the time they take their first breath until they're 18 years of age and considered to be pretty much a full-grown, anatomically grown adult. All the things that have to happen with your hormones and your immune system and your neurologic system and developing your eyes and your ears and your ability to walk and talk and eat and digest. And I mean, all those things that have to happen. And yet we will deposit these vaccines in these kids at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, a year. And how can we possibly think that putting those ingredients in those rapidly evolving, developing children is harmless? People are not thinking, and the people who are thinking the least are the physicians.
Yes, I'd have to go along with that, because that's where you're dead right. That's where it's all could be stopped, couldn't it?
It could all be stopped if they weren't so greedy. And in my opinion, I don't care if you love your doctor, you think your doctor's like Santa Claus, they're the best person in the world, you want to invite them to dinner, they're funny, they treat your kids well, you really think they're just a great human being, they are lazy and they're poisoning you. Yeah. And if you cannot see past that and look past their personality to their ineptitude of actually reading and studying and understanding what's coming through that needle and what they are doing to your body, then how can you trust them? How can you say, if I got really, really sick, this person that can't even name me three ingredients coming through that needle being injected into my child, that's the person I'm going to trust if I get really sick?
Can we call the police? Doc, what do you reckon? That's what Mike Adams said. He said that these doctors are walking around with a deadly weapon. I mean, what would happen if I walked around the public in the local mall with a needle trying to jab people? The police would arrest me. They'd probably charge me with terrorism. Can people call the police if the doctor's trying to jab them with that needle? I can't see why not.
Well, I'll tell you, I had a woman, somebody who posted this on my Facebook page a couple of years ago, and I've been using it ever since. They said, you know, if you take your 1-year-old child and you would take them to your dining room table, and you'd have 2 or 3 adults four-postering them, you know, holding them down on their back by their arms and their legs while they were screaming, crying, thrashing around, and someone else was injecting them with formaldehyde and aluminum and animal cells and human DNA and viruses and bacteria, and they were taking these needles and doing that on your dining room table, you would be arrested, your children would be taken away, and you'd be put in prison. But that's a normal day in a pediatrician's office.
Yeah, which is frightening, isn't it, when you think about it like that? It really is. And when you mentioned earlier, Doctor, that it's really only a product, and that's exactly what it is. It's a product, you know. It's a saleable product.
Yeah, cheap.
And here they are forcing it on us in this country.
Forcing. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, they're forcing it through the relief system the government had for parents to have their children minded while they worked. I mean, they've forced this system of the mother going to work anyway through the economy and through the way they've structured that. And, of course, two really have to go to work to make ends meet because, you know, Adam knows well what they're paying in rents for a small bedroom and a half flat in Sydney. It's over $500 a week rent. Well, you know, you look at the average wage is about $800 or $900, so the lady has to go to work, and this is what they've done now. They've put pressure on that.
Well, it's the childcare
rebates. Force them into vaccination.
You
yes.
get rebates for your childcare, and it can be very, very expensive, Doc. It can be nearly $1,000 a week to have your child in daycare for families, but they get that half of that back in rebates. But now families who don't vaccinate won't see that money. And so they're locked into this dreadful system, you know, because Australia's become so expensive, especially in major cities and especially in Sydney, and families rely on that. So, you know, I mean, I can't understand why now in 2015, Garth, they're actually saying on our mainstream media now, Doc, that unvaccinated children are a threat to Australian
yes.
society. That's what they're saying, and they're saying they shouldn't be allowed in schools or even to be on buses. And they're not getting on experts, are they, Garth? They're not getting on any expert whatsoever to discuss this. They're getting on people from the Murdoch newspapers who are just pushing vaccines. It's really disgusting behaviour on behalf of our very low, despicable media in this country, Garth, have no credit at all anymore in my eyes.
Yeah, well, I think we should push that fact that Dr. Sherry brought up, was that, and it really appealed to me because I hadn't looked at it like that. That it's a product.
It's just a product. Yep.
It's nothing natural. It's nothing. It's just a darn product that's killing our kids.
And it's very glossy. It's a glossy campaign, the way they push it onto people as well, and they use a little bit of fear or a lot of fear and misinformation, and they, you know, and people buy into it. You know.
And I think if people understood that, they would take a lot more notice. So, yes.
And I have yet to hear any pro-vaccine person who spouts this off, who's always saying, you know, everybody's got to get vaccinated to protect all the people that can't be vaccinated. You know, if you're too young or you've got cancer, or you've got you're on immunosuppressive drugs because you've had an organ transplant or something like that. Show me with unequivocal proof that me getting a flu shot is going to keep you from getting sick.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm going to shed the flu shot, which could make it, you know, or the chickenpox vaccine or measles or stuff like that. Me getting a shot is going to keep you from getting sick. When I can shed these things and let's say you are the person, I mean, I get a flu shot so you don't get sick, but you smoke. You don't wash your hands, you eat crappy food, you know, you don't exercise, you're 100 pounds overweight, you don't take care of yourself, but somehow me getting a flu shot is going to keep you healthy and keep you from getting sick.
It actually all started. Doc, I sent you the Claire Harvey article about anti-vaxxers being baby killers. I know that was too frustrating for you to read, but that's kind of what started it all. And so this is important to see as well, because I've been following this for 2 years, and it was actually Rupert Murdoch newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, brought in the no jab, no play. And they actually lobbied and lobbied our government to bring in these laws because, as we know, Tony Abbott didn't vaccinate his own daughters. Probably totally along the board, Garth. I'm not sure, but it makes him a hypocrite. But he wouldn't really jump on this, and this newspaper really got vicious about it, and they forced these changes. This was a newspaper. So what does that tell you about who's running the show in this country? But as this terrible woman, this Claire Harvey, said, you know, would you kill a baby? You're a baby killer. You're a terrorist. Parents who don't vaccinate are terrorists. And they used this little baby, Riley Hughes, who died after contracting whooping cough, Doc. And they spread it all across their papers. And in none of these articles whatsoever, there's not one shred of information to back up vaccine safety or herd immunity or anything. They never offer anything. And we went on and we battled these trolls, didn't we, Garth? With Dr. Reimer, and they're just low-life scumbags. That's what they are, Doc. You know, you as a doctor could put up all the information you want, and they'll just come back and say, quack, 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 quack. That's how low they are, so we're not bothering with them anymore because they've offered nothing. But I wanted to ask you, Doc, about this pertussis. We're hearing a lot of stuff about virus shedding and all this stuff. Is it possible for a mother to get the pertussis vaccine and shed that to her newborn baby? How's this happening? Because I know it's going on in American schools. I've been reading in California where all these kids are getting whooping cough, but they've all been vaccinated. How is this spreading? What's happening here with pertussis? Because that's a big one in Australia.
Well, first of all, to answer the first part of your question, mothers cannot spread pertussis from the vaccine because the pertussis vaccine is not a virus. It's not a virus.
Not a live virus vaccine. Yes,
and it's actually made. It's actually made from the toxin, the toxoid that is produced by the pertussis bacteria, and an antibody is made to this weakened toxoid that is produced by the Bordetella pertussis bacteria. So it's a completely different type of vaccine than, say, the flu shot or shingles or chickenpox or oral polio. It's completely different. So it's not a sheddable thing. But you're exactly right about saying how the incidence of pertussis has continued to creep up. It's been going up for about the last 10 to 12 years. And when you read the transcripts of the ACIP meetings where they sit around and discuss this, they don't really know why that is. They know that the pertussis vaccine was first developed and used widely in the 1940s. They are not sure if perhaps the antigens on the surface of the actual Bordetella pertussis bacteria has shifted and changed so the antibody doesn't kill it. They're not sure if the toxoid now is stronger. They know that one of the things, there's another strain of that's called parapertussis.
We have that here.
More and more prevalent, and the vaccine doesn't address parapertussis. And so they're thinking that perhaps the bacteria has shifted and it's created a void, and, you know, nature abhors a vacuum, and it's being filled with the parapertussis that we're seeing more of that, and the vaccine doesn't work for that at all.
Can they carry it in the back of their throat at all, the mothers, for example, that have been vaccinated with that? I mean, it's crazy. I don't understand because she had a newborn baby. It's happening a lot and they're somehow getting it and they're blaming unvaccinated kids. But I'm wondering what type of technology may be in these things and how it's able to go from body to body. That's all. It's really strange.
Well, and I know that when you get the Hib vaccine for Haemophilus influenza B, I mean, it really has knocked down a lot of the other strains. And I believe there's 7 or 8 strains of Haemophilus influenza B. And the one that has been taken out by the vaccine, there are now stronger strains and serotypes that have fallen into the gap. The same thing happened with Prevnar and strep. The same thing has happened with meningitis, with the meningitis vaccine. The same thing has happened now with HPV, with the Gardasil vaccine. I mean, we're just tinkering with Mother Nature. And as we take out all of these things that are supposed to be there, we are creating more and more virulent types of viruses and bacteria that to fill in the gap. It's sort of like the superbugs that are being created in the hospital systems because of the overuse of antibiotics. I mean, these are living things. Mm. And, you know, they're fighting back. Now, they may not have a brain, but they've got survival in their genes, and they're figuring out ways to become resistant. We continue to feel that we have to eliminate all these infections. And if we could create just enough vaccines, we'd get rid of all the viruses and bacteria in the world that are harmful. Well, what is the trade-off to that going to be? We're going away again from a fever, a cough, a rash, a diarrhea, some sore throat, things that are age appropriate. And we can do things to keep ourselves healthy. We can increase our vitamin D level. We can make sure that when you get a blood test, that's around that the level of that number should be somewhere between 80 and 100 to be effective. You can take vitamin C. You can wash your hands. You can go to bed on time because, and particularly for children, they need anywhere from 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night, even all the way up until being a teenager, and that when they're asleep, that like restores, cleanses, replenishes their immune system, rebalances their hormones. I mean, sleep is a very important function for human beings, and it does a lot of things to improve your resistance. So there's a lot of natural healthy things. Eat good food, drink clean water, wash your hands, and it sounds like, oh yeah, Dr. Tenpenny, you're just like crazy. I mean, that doesn't keep you from getting sick. Like, really? It's what's kept everybody healthy for, a very long time before we had vaccines around. And in fact, you can make a very strong argument that a lot of these illnesses went away, including like typhoid and cholera and plague and all these things, because of improvement of not only hygiene and water treatment, but refrigeration. Because we had refrigeration for foods and milk and all of these things, and we had clean water, and we had sewer systems that were installed and continued to improve all over the world, that it was hygiene that made things go away, not the vaccines.
Yeah, this is what they're pushing, all the trolls. They keep saying vaccines got rid of all the deadly diseases in all of history. And, you know, they don't back themselves up one way, but that you're right. That's exactly, perfectly right. Of course it is. I mean, yes. I don't understand, Garth, we have such a clean country in Australia. I mean, why are children getting 30 vaccines or whatever it is? It just doesn't make sense to me, Doc. And I don't understand. If a mother's healthy and she gives birth in a healthy, loving environment and she breastfeeds and she doesn't need vaccines, and when that baby's old enough to start eating and it has a good organic, clean diet with lots of healthy fats and vitamin D, as you said, and vitamin C, all these things, there's no need for these. And if we had chicken pox and didn't we, Garth, the mumps, measles or whatever, and we're all perfectly healthy, but the media's whipping up this hysteria that if a child gets chicken pox, it's the end of the world, you know, and it's amazing people, Doc, are buying into this.
You have to go back to what I said earlier about that you cannot, if you're in industry, remember this is a product. And it's one of your product lines, you know, it's sort of like, like Kia cars, like I own a Kia, right? So there's a lot of different brands. There's, you know, Fortes and Sorentos and, you know, all these other things. But the big umbrella is the Kia, and they have all these different products. Well, the vaccine injury or the pharmaceutical industry has all these product lines, and one of their products is vaccines. And so, and what that product does is breaks the system, so that now they can sell you the rest of their product line. Yes. And if you have not broken the system, if you have an unvaccinated child that's functioning perfectly well, that has never even has to be on an antibiotic, they're healthy, they're on no chronic daily medications, they are not broken, how can you sell those kids the rest of your product line? You can't. Yes. So now you have to them all with vaccines. They all have to be broken in order to build a $1 trillion industry with the rest of our product line.
Yeah. It's the faith as well, isn't it, Garth? The absolute faith, Doc, that parents have in this system. It's amazing. They go jogging and they eat a healthy diet and they exercise and they act so healthy, and then I'm taking little Tommy down to get his shots. I'm just like, what the hell's going on?
We did a whole video on that here in California that said, you know, what is it that you only eat organic and cloth diapers and no BPA, nipples, and you read every single label for every single thing, but you never bothered to ask to read the label on the package insert of what they're injecting in your kid?
It's amazing. Yeah. It's incredible how humans could get to this state. I mean, it's unbelievable. And they're injecting hepatitis B, Garth, vaccines into newborn babies within the first 24 hours.
Yeah. Did you, just while you mentioned food, did you see that thing on McDonald's where a doctor used his own son as a test case and he put him on Big Macs, chicken nuggets, fries, etc., and Coca-Cola. His name was Dr. Spector. And after a couple of weeks, he lost nearly 1,400 types of bacteria species in his gut. And he was getting sick very quickly, so the doctor took him off it. So this applies to vaccines, doesn't it? Because McDonald's is a product, and people should be looking at the labels there too.
Yeah, it's all designed to kill
you. It's crazy. We're just not that sort of people anymore. We take for what the media tells us, and that's why the Murdochs are so powerful. You know, we just look at the news on the TV and on the paper. Okay, and as Dr. Sherry said earlier, when they're skimming through, they don't really read everything.
They don't read anything. And to their defense, they don't really have a lot of time. I don't know if you've ever walked into like a doctor's, not an office like their waiting room or where they see patients, but their back office, like where they keep all their, you know, stuff.
Yes.
I mean, you walk in there, and at least in the States, I mean, there's desks and they have medical journals, you know, stacked feet high, you know, 10, 12, 15 inches high, all over the place of medical journals and articles. And I read a study, this was quite a few years ago, but I remember reading a study that said that if a physician read 100% of all of their medical literature just in their subspecialty, so just if you were an ophthalmologist or an orthopedist, a bone doctor, if you read all of the medical literature that came out every month in just your one isolated specialty, it would take somewhere between 400 and 600 hours of time. That's how much gets out there all the time. So now lateralize a little bit. If there's an orthopedist, is he going to read anything about vaccines or vitamins or anything like that when he has to spend more time than he even has to try to cover his own journals? So now he takes his own journals and he just has to flip through them. And you know, at the beginning, I don't know if you've ever seen a layout in a medical journal, but it starts out at the top with an abstract, which is like a summary. And then there's one sentence at the bottom that is actually the conclusion of the abstract. And now you've got, you know, 7 or 8 more pages of, you know, size 2 font, you know, stuff all the way that you have to read. Well, I can tell you, having read many hundreds of medical journal articles fully, I mean, not just the abstract or the conclusion, but the full article. And many times you get down to the end of it and you read the actual data and how they structured the study and the things that they ruled in and ruled out and then the discussion on it. You kind of get to the end and scratch your head and say, how in the world did they possibly come to that conclusion based on all the information that's in the rest of the studies? But yet the only thing that the physician sees is and reads and plugs into their brain is the conclusion that, and the actuality of it may be very different than what the whole body of the research was.
Yes, well, that's why we need people like you, Dr. Sherry. And this is the reason, you know, and this is the great thing of the internet, where you can get on and you can sort of filter through these scholars and experienced and educated people who have got the qualifications to understand a lot of this. Because if I read through one of those documents, my brain would freeze over. I'm sorry, to try and understand it, it needs to be people like yourself who can understand it and tell us as lay people. And I think more of this has got to come out and into the people who have children and are pondering, should I or should I not?
Yeah. I think people are worried, Garth. And
yes.
A lot of people, especially in Sydney, they might vaccinate, they might not vaccinate, they might only get what they think, they might get homeopathic medicine, maybe a whole bunch of things, and that freedom's been taken away. Doctor, as well as in the United States, and it's our bodies, you know, it's your body, it's your child's body, your body's not owned by Rupert Murdoch, it's not owned by any pharmaceutical companies or governments, it's your health and your body, and you should have the absolute ultimate final say as to what goes into it, not these damn people. It's unbelievable, but, you know, we just have to keep pushing this. And is there any chance of you actually coming to Australia? To do a talk or a holiday or something? I can understand you wouldn't want to, based on what this despicable low-life media did in this country. And as I said, they're just gutless cowards. So, you know, but we would love to get you here, because I think, as I said, Garth, it's backfired. and there's more
interest
now.
Well, I think more people, there's so many people have become aware. You know, an article I read, not so much because they were aware of Dr. Sherry in a way, but because here is a doctor coming to this country and they've denied her free speech
exactly.
to tell her side of the story. And a lot of Australians are saying, hey, you know, that's not a fair go sort of thing.
No.
So all through that, it's created a very big interest here.
Of course it has. This is not the Australia I know, Garth. Australian people believe in a fair go. And as I said to Sherry before, it's the media. And who controls the media? Rupert Murdoch. And who's he involved with up to his eyeballs? Big Pharma. It wasn't the people. The people are fine with it, minus these trolls, whoever they work for, Doctor. They seem to be on the computer all day working for some type of companies. I don't know who they are. And they just send out disinformation and they work for the News Corp, the Media News Corp in Australia. And when these disgusting articles go up in the Daily Telegraph pushing vaccines, anyone that goes on there with an open mind, these trolls go on there and push them out until they retain the top of their pecking order. And so, you know, no one's allowed to have a say, and it's ridiculous. So, you know, I think it would be very well here.
Well, I think that one of the things that most people probably know this, but for those who don't, it bears repeating. I was the media put this whole thing out there as though I had come to Australia. I had set up 7 different speaking venues. I was charging $200 a ticket to get paid, and I was, you know, a quack from the U.S. who wasn't even a real doctor by Australian standards. Well, the truth of the matter is that I was coming there as an invited guest. I didn't set any of it up. It was set up to be part of my vacation and my holiday that I was going to do there in between times. I was one of several speakers who was going to be speaking at these things. And I might as well tell the truth now. I wasn't even getting paid. They had raised enough money to buy my plane ticket. But I was going to be out of my office here in the United States for 3 weeks, and that was a pretty big loss to me. So not only was I not getting paid to speak, I was actually going to be losing a lot of money by not working here in my country. And so the way that they painted it out, that I was there to co-opt all these silly, stupid Australians that can't think for themselves, I mean, like, really? you know? And I was making all of this money, and I was just this money-grubbing, you know, person. It's like, oh, my goodness, you know, let's just tell the truth. It's been a far enough – I was supposed to come there in January. It's now May, and let's just tell the truth. You know, this was not about money. And what I said to the very first radio interview that I did with somebody in Sydney was at the end of the interview, he said – it was supposedly the largest radio station in Sydney – and he said to me, he goes, were you really surprised at the blowback that you got from the people here in Australia? And I said, I was extremely surprised. I said, I was coming there, quietly coming into the country, going to speak at 7 different venues, maybe, you know, 1,000 people total, or 14, if we got 200 people per location, so 1,400 people in 5 different cities. In between times, get to see a little bit of your country. I've been there before, and I was looking, but I'd never been to Adelaide or the Gold Coast. And I was looking forward to my holiday, make some new friends in Australia, maybe 1,400 people total who had been speaking to the choir, people who were already kind of on the same page as me, and quietly got on a plane and gone home. You people are the ones that made a big national event out of it. It wasn't me. Yeah. And he said, well, I got to give you that one. That's true.
Well, there was a doctor that caused a lot of that. He was the head of that. There's a group. What do they call themselves? There's a group out here in Australia that are. Yes.
Skeptical
VSC.
Doctors.
Is that them? Vaccine Skeptic Society.
Yeah, we pinpointed some of them, Garth. Yeah, they're actually they're not as big as they make themselves out to be, Sherry. They're very small.
One of them's headed by a doctor.
Yeah. Well, they've got some power there, but if they're listening to this, you're just cowards and you're not going to win. We're going to win because we have right on our side, and they're just gutless cowards. That's all they are. In the Murdoch Daily Telegraph, Dr. Sherry, they actually printed a report, a news article. With a Galaxy poll that said 86% of Australians want forced vaccinations for all children in this country. And when you clicked on to vote to view the results, it was 86% that didn't, who had voted. Oh. And so we sent it everywhere. We even got it overseas. And everyone was flooding them with emails asking for a please explain. And you know what they did? They kept the story out, but they took the poll down. So yeah, this shows you how low the Murdoch media are in this country. Just absolute low-life toilet bugs. That's what they are.
<That's good>.
Actually, sorry, Sherry, I'm insulting the poor old toilet bug. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry, toilet bugs out there. You know, you've done nothing wrong. Rupert Murdoch's media is much lower. But how low can you go? That's the question. Yeah. But they're prepared to go there anyway. But As I said, they're just big mouths, Garth. Yeah, we know them only too well. And
most of them, as we, it was, someone we were talking to, remember that they said that their experience with most of these reporters is they have absolutely no information or knowledge on most of the things they actually write about.
No, they're prostitutes.
Yeah. Yes. But that was interesting because that came from a fairly high level. I was just trying to think who that was.
Yeah, no, they don't. As I told Sherry before, they just come in, sit down, get told what to say, think and do, and then they go and have their Chardonnays and talk about what Tom Cruise is doing and the latest Hollywood gossip, you know? If you ask them a serious question, they don't know.
It was John Rappaport.
Yes, John Rappaport, Sherry, yeah, we got him involved, and he's been writing all these articles about the government here and what's going on with our media. And getting that out as well. So it's really pushing forward, and we're pushing back with you as well. And, also with Dr. Reamer and Ralph Fusitola, who did the May Day Marathon. You were a part of that, Doc, with Mike Adams, and we were a part of that with the General at Real News Australia. And so fantastic. And I'll put the links up as well, because you can get a free ebook from Natural Solutions Foundation accompanying this podcast. But it's in the last few months, Sherry, it's really exploded. I've seen an absolute massive blowback, pushback campaign just getting more and more positive and more people jumping on board with us. So it's really good to see.
Mm.
Yes, that's amazing. It's really good to know. I mean, we need to kind of hear that down over here in America, in the U.S., because we've been, in January, they submitted 110 bills in 36 different states to remove our vaccine exemptions and to take away the right to refuse. And so there's been a small handful of us that have been battling this, bigger and bigger and bigger fight. And I think that people, because they're passing the laws anyways, and I think that people are getting a little, getting kind of discouraged, like, no matter what I do or what I say, it doesn't matter because the politicians are bought and sold by the pharmaceutical companies and they're going to do what they're told because they're just puppets.
Yep.
And so if we had more information about what you guys were doing in terms of your rallies and your marches and the people that are really standing up to try to stop this, I think that we could mutually support each other to make it better for both our countries.
That's what we're trying to do, link up, especially with the U.S., Garth. And I know in California, I just read the other day, Doc, that they're bringing in mandatory vaccinations for childcare workers, people who work in childcare industry. So we've talked about this, Garth, that this will be the next step after forced vaccination for all our children. They'll bring it in if you work for children or different workplace rules and regulations. You'll have to get your shots, and then it's going to go on from there. You won't be able to travel without vaccines. It'll just become forced for everybody, and it doesn't matter whether you're pro or for or whatever. What matters here is our right to say no and our health freedoms. This is what we're losing, and we don't want to lose that in Australia, Garth. Because it's always been, it hasn't been too bad here, Doc, we had a ride up until a few months ago, and that's been stripped away almost overnight, and it's just unbelievable, and I'm watching in the U.S., it's going even faster.
Well, and it's happening in other countries, too. I mean, there's a big fight going on in Poland right now. There's a big fight going on in Serbia that they are saying that they could go into the school systems and vaccinate the kids without even letting the parents know and without any parental consent. So it's everywhere. And what's happened when they go in and they do these big campaigns in Africa and Ethiopia, and they hold, guns to parents' heads and, to vaccinate their kids with oral polio vaccines. I mean, it's absolutely out of control. The public health system that was a lot of things that happen in government, I think, start out with good intentions, and then they get co-opted and perverted. And I think the public health system as a whole is like that. I mean, it's good to have sanitation and clean water and refrigeration and hygiene things, but they have crossed the line into the practice of medicine. And now they are dictating what the doctor-patient relationship should be, and they're telling the patient what they need to do in terms of being injected with something that could harm them. They're out of control. They've crossed the line. And I don't have the answer to this, but I think that you need to get a bunch of smart people together and figure out how to strategize going after the public health department, not only in Australia, but here in the U.S.
Mm. Yeah. That's scary, isn't it, Garth? Because in the schools in the U.S., they're taking away parental consent, aren't they, docs?
That's in Serbia.
Was that in America? Serbia. I thought I heard it on Alex Jones, where they were saying that they're sort of doing this lobbying in the schools where if the kid's a certain age, they can actually give their own consent to be vaccinated. Is that correct?
There are certain school districts and certain states where they're trying to get that passed.
Yeah, I think he was talking about that they were trying to pass that. I was heard it the other week. Yeah, it was interesting because that means your kid's going to go to school one day and could be vaccinated and you're at work being the parent and you won't know, which is terrible that they're even talking about that.
And what's the worst part of that is let's say that you're a kind of a quiet, shy, 14-year-old girl. And, and by peer pressure of the cheerleaders and the popular ones in your class, you get pressured into getting, say, a Gardasil vaccine. And you've never been vaccinated before, and you know how your parents feel that they really are against vaccines altogether, and they fought really hard to keep you unvaccinated. But you succumbed to the peer pressure of your peers and maybe the school nurse and whoever else around. And then you start to get sick. And you have all these symptoms and all these things going on, and your mom's in a quandary, and she's taking you to the doctor and going different places and taking you to this doctor and that doctor, and you're getting sicker and sicker and sicker, and you just can't bring yourself to tell your mom that maybe it had something to do with that shot I got at school because you knew that your mom was against that shot and you got peer pressured into doing it. How do you unwind that? How do you justify that? This is what the sinister part of this. I mean, what if you have four children and your first child was fully vaccinated and had horrible reactions, maybe like death or like some of the things that you were reading.
Brain damage,
damage or whatever. And now you're going to be mandatorily required by your government to put your other three children possibly into the same state.
That's frightening,
isn't it? Or treated like a criminal.
Yep.
There was a case in of Texas that we know about that this is a vaccine injured child with brain damage, probably labeled autistic, but has a lot of other health problems because of it. It costs $190,000 per year to take care of that child's medical bills. But yet, we're going to force that parent to possibly have to vaccinate their other three kids with the horror of thinking of what could possibly happen to their other three children that happened to their first one?
Yes.
I mean, these are the sorts of things that we've got to get the lapdog media to get put that, because you make it personal. What if it was your kids? What if you had a child that was severely injured and now you are forced to vaccinate your other ones? How would that make you feel? Would that scare you to death?
It's unbelievable. They're treating healthy, completely normal families with completely healthy, unvaccinated children like terrorists now, like they got they're lepers. It's unbelievable. It's really discriminating against these poor kids who have done nothing wrong. I know many unvaccinated kids, and they're the healthiest kids I've ever seen. I don't need some troll to tell me it's not that way, because I know it is. I've seen it. I've seen these vaccinated kids, the runny noses and the infections and ear and throat and nose infections all year, and the blotches and the rashes and the weak immune system. I know. You know, I mean, it's right in your face. And we read reports out on some of our other podcast, Doc, that, some schools around Australia, particularly in Western Australia and Queensland, the teachers are struggling and it's collapsing under the weight of having to care for new autistic children. Even the education department in Brisbane in Queensland said that they've never seen anything like this ever before, the amount of autistic children in Australia. It's just skyrocketed. And we're made to believe by the media that nature's just evil and autism just floats around in the environment, Doc, and your kid just gets it, just like leukemia. It's all just part of life and normal. And they're normalizing all these diseases now. Every time I open up a book, Garth, or a paper, or turn on the TV, or walk outside, or wherever you go, there's all these fun runs and raising money for cancer and brain cancers for children and childhood diseases and Ronald McDonald House, you know. You buy our cheeseburgers, and when your kid gets sick, we'll give your kid a cot in Ronald McDonald House, you know. And all these parents have good intentions, and they're jogging, and they're having big morning teas, and they're shaving their head for the Leukemia Foundation, Garth. And they're not answering the big questions here. They're not looking at the bigger picture as to why our children's hospitals in Sydney are bursting out of the windows, Doctor, with sick children, with terrible diseases, exotic cancers we've never known before. As Dr. Rima said, Garth, when she was a medical student in the 1970s, they used to crowd around the bedside of sick children because it was so rare. And now look, what do we have, one in 50 kids autistic in the United States? I think the stats were. This is ridiculous. When are people going to wake up and see this, Doc? You know, that it's the vaccines doing this.
Yeah. Yes, it's an enormous problem. But I think we're getting there slowly. But that's why there's more pressure coming on through the newspapers and through the governments. They're starting to panic because, you know, for Abbott to do this, I mean, Abbott is going to go out. I can tell you, there's so many people are disenchanted with what he's done, and he's trying to, you know, prop up this and prop up that. But the main issues that he's been doing, like this mandatory vaccination, I don't really think he's got any idea of how many people are against it.
Well, it was Gardasil, wasn't
and
it?
I think he'll go out. He'll go out in a landslide. But the trouble is, we've got no one else to put in.
Yeah, well, we have our new Greens leader. Did you see this tosser, Garth? He's the new. He's our new Greens leader, Doc, and Richard D. Natalie. His name is, and he's not buying into the anti-vaxxer crap. That's what he's publicly said, and he's not buying into the raw milk drinkers and the anti-vaxxers and the tree huggers. This is the leader of the Greens Party in Australia.
Oh my God!
So we all have to get together and kick this guy back out on the street, out of his cushiony job, because this guy's an absolute creep, Garth. This is ridiculous. So, you know, the Greens are losing ground as well in Australia. And now people found out that Tony Abbott didn't give his own daughters the Gardasil vaccines, but here are the drug companies pushing it. People are really angry about this, Doc. So good news on that front. They're seeing the hypocrisy of this.
Yes, yes.
They're working really hard to get this vaccine, you know, pulled off of the market in a lot of other countries. And I think that we're making more headway in Europe and in Japan than we are here, because in the United States, of course, that we just decided not only we're going to give Gardasil to little girls, but we'll give it to little boys too, so that we can double the market share.
Same here.
Yeah.
Giving little schoolboys Gardasil vaccines.
Yeah.
And putting sugary coating on the top of it as well, making it, you know, like it's all just part of normal life. And I was
you wonder if these
horrified.
People doing it, can they go at home of a night? I mean, they must have children.
Double standards, Garth, as we said.
You know, who are they? What are these people that can do this? These people in our health departments. I mean, they're educated people. Many are scientists. Surely. They must read labels and like Dr. Sherry's doing, for goodness sakes. These people have been educated.
And we said that,
but
Garth. They're
saying,
psychopaths.
Saying vaccines are good for you.
Yeah, they know they're bad. They know what the vaccines are doing. And being a doctor, for example, but they're getting their check and they've got their nice lifestyle at home, so they're comfortable with both, which makes them a psychopath.
Well, it does, yes.
Because look at Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. She can't do it. She can't do that. That's why she's a doctor speaking out. And how many are there that went through that field and they're just so uncomfortable with the way the whole system's running, and they're seeing with their own eyes that nobody's been cured. They're being injured and maimed.
Yes, well, they're not. They're certainly got a double standard, that's for sure.
Yeah, all right.
I thank God I'm not them. I can sleep at night. Anyway, Dr. Sherry, it's been great
Yeah, well, you know,
we're
it's coming.
You're way over the time limit.
Yeah, we'll pack it up now. But as we said,
it's been really great talking
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really feel as though the information you've offered is certainly going to people are going to take notice. There's no doubt about it. You know, and I think this will be another shot in the arm, but not with a vaccine.
A good shot by the good doctor. Some vitamin D.
What I hope that'll happen is people will hear this and they'll come to my Facebook page, which is Dr. Tenpenny on Vaccines.
Oh, yes. Get your info out. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
facebook.com/vaccineinfo. And there's 135,000 fans. And I hope after this podcast, we can add 10,000 more because it's got a big reach and it's a very busy site. And we talk about a lot of very important social issues, mostly about vaccines, but other things too that I think are really important. My website is drtenpenny.com, which is D-R, T like Tom, E-N, P like Paul, E-N-N-Y, drtenpenny.com. And then our subscription site, which is vaccinereserchlibrary.com, vaccinereserchlibrary.com, where I have a full-time researcher that combs through thousands of articles every week, like what we were talking about before, and finding those nuggets of problems associated with vaccines. And we've collected more than 6,500 articles now showing the conflicts of interest and the problems with these vaccines, and they're all categorized. You can sign up for free for 2 weeks and have access to MMR, aluminum, and pertussis. And if you like what you see, then you can join the site, and the funding of that site helps to keep this whole thing going of the staff of people that I have working for me to keep getting this information out.
Sure, yes. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have also, Doc, the Freedom of Choice marches coming across Australia on June the 21st. And they are No Jab, No Pay, No Way march for freedom of choice in our children's health and care and well-being. And these events will be in Brisbane, Melbourne, Perth, Adelaide and Canberra. And so people can go onto Facebook and go to Freedom of Choice. No Jab, No Pay, No Way, and I'll put the links up on our Facebook page. There's already thousands of people going and invited, so this should be good, Doc, for people to march for their rights because they're being slowly eroded and taken away, and we need to get out there and be vocal and stop this before it's too late. And also link up with you guys in America. Australia and America have very close relations, and we're in this together, so we need to join up and hold hands and get this information out to as many people as we can. And we hope to have you back next month, if you can do it, to talk with us as well. That would be great.
Absolutely. I think it would be great. I think what you guys are doing is just fantastic, and getting this information out, getting people organized. Because I've often said, like here in the United States, we have 310 million people, and we have 454 congressmen. And why is it that we let them ruin our health, destroy our country, when we could, you know, just sheer numbers could go in there and take over Washington and do something different, right?
Oh, they'd, yes. They'd be crawling under rocks.
They call it the sleeping lion, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And in Australia, you know, square mileage, like surface area, you guys have a big country and it's spread out, and your country's probably, you know, almost as large as the United States just in terms of land mass. But if you could get enough people organized to get your politicians really afraid that they're going to lose their jobs, and the next guy's going to lose their job, and the next guy's going to lose their job, until they start paying attention to your constitution and paying attention to what the people want and don't want. This is the things that your country and my country went to war over to get our independence for. You know, we weren't going to be told what to do.
Yeah, yes. That's right. And we're calling on a national boycott of Rupert Murdoch's papers as well. And we've already had a massive response, getting everyone to tell their families and friends and work friends not to give these people money, because then they feel it as well, because they're the ones doing it, the media. So we need to push them back as well. So it's a whole lot going on, and we're not going to stop. And we don't want people to buy into these ridiculous media newspapers anymore, Garth. You know, spend your money on something else. Go on a holiday.
Yes.
You know, don't give your money to Rupert Murdoch. They're liars and they're cheaters and they're disinfo agents. That's what they do. So all
they do
good.
It very well.
Yeah, they do very well at it. But as Sherry said, there's
they
millions
do it,
of
they
us.
Do it very well. They're very cunning.
Yeah, they're very cunning. They're very cunning. And they're
and as particularly as we've discussed with Dr. Sherry, the way they manipulate, like in the schools now, where the child can decide whether they want the vaccine.
We can't have this. Yeah,
this is manipulation to the highest degree, and it's evil.
It is evil. It's terrible. It's terrible because you don't have any control over what's happening to your child in school.
Imagine if your child. Oh dear, oh me. Anyway,
it's just getting worse, like a cancer, and we've got to stop this. Because if we don't stop it, it's just going to get terrible. And I don't think people want to live in a medical dictatorship in Australia. I mean,
understand that if you don't uphold your rights to refuse, like here in the United States, same thing will happen in Australia. There are more than 300 vaccines in the pipeline.
Oh, you sent me that article, Doc. That was fascinating.
If you give up your right to refuse the 16 vaccines that are currently in the pipeline, you will have no right to refuse the next several hundred.
Oh, hundreds. That's unbelievable. Yeah, I'll put those up as well. Oh, my goodness. Hundreds of them, Garth. They're working on probably GMO vaccines with all sorts of new types of nanotechnology inside them as well. So frightening stuff. Staggering, really. Yeah, we need to stop the cut the head off the snake, Doc. What do you reckon?
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Well, I look forward to talking to you guys next month.
Yes, we'll be joined by the General from Real News Australia, and we have all these great independent news media and websites, Tot News, all of us coming forward and stepping up all around Australia now. So the General will be on with us. He's up in Brisbane to get your information out as well up there more. So that will be really great to talk with you again, and we'll plug a little bit deeper into your research.
Great. Sounds good.
Terrific.
Can you stay there for 1 second, Doc?
Sure.
Thanks for listening, folks, and we will be back next week. Okay. Thanks for listening, and please get this out to everybody that you know, and help us to share this incredible knowledge. To leave you this from Natural News. As the vaccine industry has now come to realize, it's so much easier to kill people when they voluntarily comply with the injections. Hence the aggressive media propaganda push to achieve absolute blind obedience to vaccines so that no one will ask questions when sterilization or euthanasia chemicals are used. That's no doubt why vaccines have been routinely tested for depopulation programs via two primary methods. Achieve covert sterilizations of targeted populations by combining sterilization chemicals with vaccines. The slow kill. Directly kill vaccine recipients by intentionally lacing vaccines with euthanasia chemicals that cause death. The fast kill. Method 1 has been repeatedly used throughout Africa, Mexico, and Mexico today, and South America to inflict sterilization upon targeted groups via immunization and vaccination programs. Just last year, in fact, Natural News reported on the discovery of a covert depopulation vaccine program being run in Kenya. Tetanus vaccines given to millions of young women in Kenya have been confirmed by laboratories to contain a sterilization chemical that causes miscarriages. And this is from Kenya itself, from Catholic Doctors Association, a pro-vaccine organization. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Are we going to continue to allow our children to be treated like this?